work with the Danish government. The Danes have been loyal and proper stewards of that territory since the post, and then in the post-war world, the United States has enjoyed unfettered access to it. So I do not see what the objective is here. There is an element within the Trump administration that gets really excited by the prospect of a North American co-prosperity sphere. And I don't see the logic for it or the motive for it. And territorial expansionism does undermine the United States' fundamental proposition, which is that power, political power, is justly derived from the consent of the governed.
Well, that was...
And we risk sacrificing that by the approach that we've taken to muscling the Danes into territorial concessions. Well.
Noah Rathman, senior writer at National Review, thank you very much indeed for joining me. This week, that's been this my week on Times Radio. That is it from me this week, finishing with a fluff as I probably began. Thank you so much for your company. Aisha Zarika is in from 1 o'clock tomorrow. My producer was Lizzie Highfield. Brian Boyden was pressing the buttons. On the Times at One next week, it is Joe Coburn. But right now, get ready for Fee Glover and Jane Garvey, because they're here next on Times Radio.
Across the UK, on DAB digital radio, online and on your smart speaker. This is Times Radio, the voice of the times.
Hello, good afternoon. 2 o'clock, this is Jane Garvey and Fee Glover on Times Radio.
In the next 2 hours on our programme, the BBC says it's facing growing competition from authoritarian broadcasters and admits it recognises problems after allegations of bias. We'll look at the corporation's challenges with Roger Mosey. Is London ready for a mayoral-shaped shake-up? We're going to hear from an independent candidate on why housing is the key to fixing the city's problems. It seems that cashback actually works. We're going to talk to somebody who saved nearly £1,000 in 2 years. And our big guest after 3:30 is the actor and writer and former prisoner Rick Renton, talking about his role in the new BBC drama Waiting for the Out.
Let's start with the news at 2. Andy Hayes.
Thank you, Jane. Good afternoon. The government's expected to do a U-turn over planned rises to business rates for pubs. It follows a backlash from the industry. More than 1,000 pubs have banned Labour MPs from their premises. Chancellor Rachel Reeves is now pledging to give extra financial support to pubs on the brink of closure. The Times' chief political correspondent, Aubrey Allegretti, says this has been a major demand of Labour backbenchers.
Allies of Rachel Reeves have said, effectively, they're not trying to apologise or show contrition because they say the values for the business rates were determined independently and not by the Treasury, but they are certainly trying to show that they are in, quote, listening mode. I've heard from lots of MPs who say that they didn't experience the same closed door they found when they were pressing the Treasury to back down over changes to farmers' inheritance tax. And it's certainly true that MPs and ministers have been very frustrated about this issue and getting it in the neck from constituents.
The Mayor of London, Sir Sadiq Khan, says he's never agreed to or endorsed lower standards of vetting at the Metropolitan Police. A diversity panel overruled more than 100 decisions, admitting candidates who'd originally been rejected on safety grounds to rapists were among them. Former Premier League referee David Coote has avoided jail after being sentenced over a sexual video of a schoolboy found on his laptop. Nottingham Crown Court heard the footage was Category A and showed a 15-year-old boy in school uniform. Coote was sentenced to 9 months in prison, suspended for 2 years. Some NHS hospitals are converting corridors for patient care, adding call bells and plug sockets. Investigators say this poses serious hazards, including more difficult monitoring, infection control and potentially a lack of oxygen. Dr. Ian Higginson is president of the Royal College of Emergency Medicine.
The really sad thing about this report is that it shows how normalised corridor care has become. And the fact that literally tens of thousands of people are dying in association with this problem every year and it doesn't really make the headlines that often is another indictment of how bad this problem has become.
The government says it's working with trusts to phase out corridor care. Up to 8 inches of snow is forecast across parts of England as Storm Goretti moves across the UK. Hospitals are admitting patients who've fallen and broken their hips. The NHS is urging the public to waddle like penguins to stay safe on the ice. And Ben Stokes says he wants to stay on as England's Test cricket captain despite disappointment in the Ashes. Earlier, Australia beat England by 5 wickets in the fifth Test, finishing the series 4-1 winners. Stokes insists he backs head coach Brendan McCullum, the architect of Bazball.
You know, I absolutely love working with Baz. He's a great man and he's a very, very, very good coach. You know, there's more that goes on behind the scenes than he'll ever give away and than he'll ever let out. He's got my full support.
And for a news bulletin when you want it, search for the Times News Briefing on the Times Radio app.
Across the UK, on DAB Digital Radio, on the Times Radio app, online, and on your smart speaker. Jane Garvey and Fee Glover on Times Radio with Wickes Kitchens and Bathrooms.
Good afternoon to you. We're here until 4 o'clock this storm-ridden Thursday afternoon. I hope you're warm and safe. We'll certainly talk about the weather a little bit later on the programme. MPs are grilling the outgoing BBC DG, Tim Davey. He says the UK should be spending much more on the World Service. He calls it a unique and precious UK strategic asset. More on that in a second. Is it time for an independent candidate to be the Mayor of London? We're going to hear from a man called Peter Murray. He's co-founder of New London Architecture. He's running, isn't he, Fee? And his emphasis is on what, the urban landscape. Is that right?
So I think that his platform is very much around housing. And his argument is if you don't sort out housing for everybody in London, then you can't really sort out anything else. And there is some shocking housing in the capital these days. Quite a lot of it is the new build stuff. There are whole blocks of flats that have got structural damage already that are unlivable in. And there's this huge disparity between the wealth of London and the poverty of London. So that's the platform he's standing on. I'm just going to put it out there that he is a very talented architect. He's in his 80s. He has lots of very sensible things to say. I don't think he'll win. Oh. But I think it's worth hearing why he believes the focus needs to change a bit away from politics and sometimes party politics, much more about how living in London is going.
So that's a little bit later. What else have we got today? Well, there's a big, big interview in the Times magazine this weekend. You can hear all about it at around a quarter to three on our programme this afternoon.
He's wrong.
No. Jane Mulkerins will join us to talk about that. She's done the interview with Monica Lewinsky, and it is powerful stuff, I tell you. We're going to discuss. It does sound like I'm drunk. I'm not. Cashback, it pays off. It's quite hard to say that. Cashback pays off if you do it right. That's later too. And Lara Spirit joins us from Washington. She'll talk about that shooting in Minneapolis. And also we'll talk to a representative of Lloyd's List on this so-called shadow fleet of ships.
So, oh, you've done very well with that one.
Thank you very much. What are the most read stories on the Times website this afternoon?
In at number three, housing market predictions 2026. Should I buy property this year? The Times has analysed the key factors that will shape the property landscape over the next 12 months, from mortgage rates to overhauls of the planning and home buying systems. The second most read story, Google co-founder and second richest man flees California over tax. This is Larry Page, who's one of the billionaires loosening their ties with the state. It's over fears that they could face a one-off 5% tax on their assets. And the most read piece on the Times website is the shooting in Minneapolis. US citizen killed by immigration agent. The city's mayor tells the immigration agency to get out after Trump administration claims 37-year-old defied officers' orders before death minutes from where George Floyd was murdered. That is a story that will be constantly updated throughout the day on the Times website. You can read all of those articles on thetimes.com. You'll need your digital subscription. If you don't have one, get one. You can simply go to thetimes.com/subscribe.
Right, let's get stuck in. Let's talk about the BBC and particularly the World Service and the important issue of trust. The BBC's outgoing DG says the organisation is taking action over issues with its Arabic language service. Here is Tim Davey. He made the comments to MPs on the Public Accounts Committee.
The most important thing the BBC needs to do is deliver on its editorial guidelines and be trusted. We've all got the same intent on that. And we must deliver an impartial service. That's what we must do. We're also not perfect and we make mistakes. So that it's really important that we recognise that and we address them. I would say with regard to Arabic, we are taking some actions, and Jonathan can take, and we were taking them before the Prescott report, and we've implemented things, which I think if you look at, I'm very proud of the many people working in the Arabic service are doing an outstanding job. We should be proud of the reporting we're doing, but we have fixed issues.
He does sound a little uncomfortable, doesn't he? I think it's fair to say. This comes after allegations of anti-Israel bias by a former advisor to the corporation's board. Well, MPs were also told that the BBC's World Service does face growing competition worldwide with broadcasters from Russia and China. We'll have a word with Roger Mosey, former head of BBC Television News. First of all, let's deal with Tim Davey talking about anti-Israel bias. Do you think he answered that question well?
I think the BBC recognises it does have a problem, or did have a problem, with BBC Arabic. And therefore, if you support the BBC, as I do, it's good that they're trying to sort out BBC Arabic. But in the usual quaint, weird, annoying BBC way, they didn't really admit, when this was a salient issue, that there was a problem with Arabic. So I think Tim's right. They were fixing it behind the scenes, but they didn't really have a public dialogue about the kind of issues that were undermining, if you like, the whole coverage because of the specific issues around BBC Arabic.
Do you, as a viewer and a listener, trust the BBC on Israel?
Yes, and I think that's the problem about BBC Arabic. The BBC's coverage of the Middle East, and I would absolutely include The Times in this and most other reputable mainstream newspapers and media groups in Britain, are impartial as best they can on a very difficult issue in the Middle East. Now, within that, the BBC has a specific problem of having BBC Arabic. And also, one of the issues is there isn't a BBC Israel. So there isn't a service tailored to Israel in a way that there is a service tailored towards the Arab world. And I think the problem is that BBC Arabic at times didn't have enough editorial control. And the other thing, which again, I suspect people of, I mean older than both of you, but people of our vintage recognise that some young journalists coming into journalism these days don't quite get impartiality. And that's compounded if you're working in a Middle East environment in which journalism is incredibly partial. So I think the BBC struggled with trying to get BBC Arabic in line with the values of the rest of the organisation.
Well, let's talk about trust. This is so important. MPs were told that trust in Chinese and Russian broadcasters is going up. It isn't quite at the same level as the BBC, we should say. Trust in the BBC is nearly at 80%. The Chinese broadcaster CGTN is up to 70%. Russia Today up to 71%. Now, I don't know who they asked. I think you'd have to be really quite daft to trust Russia Today. But you tell me, Roger, how concerned are you?
I am concerned. And I think this is something where the BBC has been, to some degree, ahead of the game, but arguably crying wolf for some years by saying, this is all terrible, you need to give us more money. And now it's become real. This is real. And in quite a lot of markets around the world, not in Britain, obviously, but in quite a lot of markets around the world, the Russians and the Chinese are getting a foothold and are being believed. And what you have in the worst case is this toxic mix of Russia and Chinese state broadcasters. You've then got disinformation from a range of players, from 16-year-old hackers in Macedonia. And then you've also got platforms like X and Meta and all the rest of them run by quixotic billionaires from California. And therefore, this need for something that's true has become a lot stronger. And I think we suddenly realise just how real the battle is.
The trouble with the truth is, it's quite complicated, isn't it? There are grey areas everywhere you look. Sometimes outright balderdash is frankly easier to digest and often more entertaining. What does the BBC do about that?
Well, I think the BBC, I think the way ahead for public media organisations and for reputable organisations like the Times and Times Radio is that you keep the facts as being sacred and then allow the vast range of opinion. And that's actually quite interesting and entertaining. So you can get the liveliness by having how people respond to the facts, but the facts have to be in common. And that really is the problem with Donald Trump and a whole load of other administrations around the world, in that they do have different facts. And sometimes there is a discernible thing that happened that you've got to be honest about and report that. And then you can have people expressing their opinion on it.
Just briefly move on to a couple of other issues. We know that Tim Davie doesn't have very long in the role. Who should take over? And it's likely to be a woman because, by common consent, it's about time, whatever you believe about that sentiment. If it is a woman, the women in the running are earning so much money in much easier jobs than this one. They're going to have to be paid a fortune, aren't they? And that'll go down like the proverbial cup of cold you-know-what.
Yeah, and I think the BBC's idea that 7 or 8 really strong candidates are going to be sitting outside an interview room at 10 o'clock, 11 o'clock, 12 o'clock is not going to happen, because these people will need wooing. And I think the BBC is going to have to decide who it really wants to try to get into that role. And as you say, there's lots of people who are earning vast amounts of money without having this kind of ghastly scrutiny you get in the BBC. And why would they want to put themselves into that job? So I think it's going to be tough, and the BBC is going to have to be clear, I think, about who it might want. I think I'd only qualify. I think it's ridiculous there hasn't been a woman director general of the BBC, but in the end, you have to go for the right candidate for the right time. And that really has to be as wide a field as you can make it.
Yeah. Who do you think it will be, Roger?
No idea at all. I mean, the funny thing is that, I mean, in a way, I think this is a bit of condemnatory stuff about the BBC, that two of the people who are front runners, so Jay Hunt now at Apple and Kevin Backhurst now at RTE in Ireland, are both people who were editors when I was head of TV news. So that, in a way, is both strong, that they are people I think are brilliant, but it's also rather a small circle. And you've got to be thinking, you must get the best person in the whole media world to run the BBC right now. And I hope they're working hard on it.
Well, they'll have to be a journalist this time, won't they?
I think so. I mean, certainly Tim Davie was, I think, a very good DG, but he wasn't a journalist. And crucially, he resisted having a deputy director general who was a journalist. And I think what happened this year or last year was a real sign of that problem. So however good Tim is, you need someone who's a journalist who can catch the flak and, frankly, get the blame when things go wrong.
Yeah, and we can't forget that Hugh Edwards happened not just on his watch, but on the watch of other directors general too. But the news today, front page of The Sun, that Martin Clunes is playing Edwards in a drama on Channel 5. Is this just too soon?
Well, I think let's leave aside the specific Hugh Edwards issue. And I think that dramas involving living people are always very risky. And I think it's absolutely right. A documentary approach seems to me to be completely legitimate and right. And you should have the right to investigate. But as we saw, you remember the film was Steve Coogan's film made about the Richard the Second. Was it Richard II or Richard III?
Third.
Third, sorry.
It's fantastic to be able to correct you, Roger, can I say.
and once you start doing a narrative in a movie of good guys and bad guys and who did it, you can run into legal problems really very, very rapidly. So yeah. Drama would not be my preferred route of looking at this.
All right, lovely. Thank you very much for coming on, Roger. That's Roger Mosey, used to be the head of BBC TV News.
And our boss, you've just had a particular moment there.
I just enjoyed that. I mean, he's a very clever man.
Yes. So the importance of decent journalism, fair and factual, cannot be underestimated in countries where censorship has moved in with a new regime. There are parts of the world that are now completely dark in terms of free press and access to information, notably Afghanistan, and it's a dangerous part of the world to currently know so little about. Well, we've been talking to two journalists who've had to leave Afghanistan because of the force of the Taliban. First, we're going to hear from Hamid Ghafouri, who's an Afghan journalist and former Fox News producer. Now, he fled the country when the Taliban returned to power in 2021. He and his family were initially granted asylum in the US, but their flight was cancelled by the recently elected Trump administration. He has since been granted a visa in Switzerland with his wife and children. His mother and sisters, though, are in Pakistan, struggling to get visas as their situation worsens. Well, Hamid told me what he knows of life back in Afghanistan for his fellow journalists.
I have consistently followed the news in Afghanistan. We have a few news agencies because the media is censored in Afghanistan. And in Afghanistan, all TV are guided to not share any bad news about the Taliban. So when they someone share bad news about the image of the Taliban, they will put them in the prison and they will torture them. Now, yeah, I have a lot of friends. They are saying, Amit, Afghanistan is just help for us. You know, we don't have any solution because all of them have the SIV process. They have the asylum cases in America. All of them are stopped and they are thinking, okay, we have one hope, like we are going to the United States and we settle our lives. But now this also closed.
That's Hamid Ghafouri. Well, nearly a year ago, I also spoke to a young Afghan journalist, Nabila Sadat. Now, she had worked as a journalist after completing her degree in Afghanistan in 2019, and her journalistic focus was on women's stories. But she had to flee with her family after the Taliban took control again, and her father became one of so many to be disappeared under the returning regime. And Nabila is now the sole breadwinner for her entire family. She's just 27. They are all currently in Pakistan too, and Nabila has sent us this voice note.
Life here has become very, very hard for us and for other Afghan refugees. After spending 2 years with a stress, hard situation and waiting, we are lucky to finally apply for a visa. If our case is accepted, it will mean a new life for us because right now in Pakistan, we don't have the right to work, to study or even our basic human rights. There was a time when we didn't have valid visas and for several months we were like prisoners inside our home, hiding from the police. The Pakistani government announced that anyone who tells the police we're undocumented against our hiding or reports their address will receive a reward of 10,000 rupees for each Afghan. Police would come. They would knock on the doors so hard in the middle of the night that it felt like the doors was broken. We would wake up in shock, our bodies shaking. It became a nightmare for us every time the police came. Because we didn't open the door one night, they locked our door from the outside and we couldn't get out. We were very scared. We couldn't even feel safe inside our own home. We had to be so quiet so the police wouldn't hear us and take us away. We were terrified of being deported because my family and I absolutely cannot go back to Afghanistan. Our lives are in danger and if we return, we will be killed just like my father was. The police, besides deporting people, were also beating those without visas and causing them physical harm. They put a lot of pressure on us. Our landlord gave us only 3 days to take all our things and leave the house. They wouldn't make a rental contract with us without a visa and said that if we didn't leave, he would bring the police to our home. This is because the government was fining landlords who gave houses to Afghans without visas. At the same time, rent prices became very high for us and other Afghans. Sadly, going through all these hard events and dark days had destroyed our mental health. My mother's blood pressure from stress has gone very high, and because of too much stress, her diabetes has also increased a lot. Unfortunately, because I didn't have a visa, I couldn't even take my mother to the hospital out of fear that the police might arrest us. At the same time, my younger sister, who's only 19 years old, has had several heart attacks because of too much stress. I really try to be strong with all the responsibilities on my shoulders, but sometimes the stress and pain become too much, and I feel like I'm lost in all of it, just struggling to breathe and survive these hard conditions.
So let's just remember that Nabila Sadat's crime was to be a journalist and to want to tell the stories of other women in Afghanistan, which aren't being told now, and it doesn't look like they're going to be told any time soon. She's 27 years old and she is supporting her entire family in Pakistan, and it sounds like their situation is becoming more dire by the day. So really, whatever you think of the standards of journalism in this country, we're allowed to have them and we're allowed to try and ask decent questions. questions of the people who say that they're representing us and we're allowed to come to work, Jane, as women. And, I mean, it really does beggar belief how much the country was promised and how much the country has now changed. There is a GoFundMe if you'd like to contribute even just a tiny amount to help Nabila support her family. One day, hopefully, she'll be able to return home and carry on bringing us the news from Afghanistan. If you go on the GoFundMe pages and just type in Afghan journalist refugees, it'll all come up.
Now, next on Times Radio, how to make cashback work for you. It can be a bit fiddly, takes a bit of effort, but you know what? It really can pay off. That's next. It's Jane and Fee on Times Radio with Wix, the experts in kitchens and bathrooms.
It turns out you can please all of the people, all of the time. Garden games for the kids, a separate cottage for the grandparents, a private chef for that special occasion. Simpson Travel, idyllic Mediterranean holidays that everyone will love. We take care of the details so you can enjoy the moment. SimpsonTravel.com, because your time is precious.
What's the feeling you get at David Lloyd Clubs? Well, let's just say that when you've experienced the tranquility of our spas, felt the feel-good intensity of a workout class, enjoyed your little one's happy faces, making friends in the kids' club, and relaxed together as a family in our club rooms, this radio ad won't be the only thing on air. Elevate your everyday with David Lloyd Clubs. Try a 3-month membership today. Terms and conditions apply.
Feel that? That little buzz of excitement? That's the weekly flutter. With chances to win up to £10,000, enter British Heart Foundation's lottery for a thrill with goodwill behind it. Because when you play, it helps fund life-saving research. So go on, keep playing, keep winning, keep us beating. Search BHF Lottery. Gamble responsibly, over 18s only. T's and C's apply. Please see our website for more details. British Heart Foundation is a registered charity.
The Story, the award-winning daily news podcast from The Times. Listen in the Times Radio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Jane Garvey and Fee Glover on Times Radio with Wix. The kitchen and bathroom sale is now on. Let the design and installation experts at Wix help transform your home. Get started by booking a free kitchen or bathroom design appointment at wix.co.uk.
And with Wix, we'd like to know your proudest moment of the week to be in with a chance of winning a £250 Wix voucher in our Wix Peacock Awards. Here's an entry from Kyra, who says, I'm proud that my offer has been accepted on a property. It's going to be my first time living alone. It's a little bit daunting, but I'm excited, even for all the DIY jobs which I know will need doing. If you'd like to enter, you can send us a WhatsApp on 0333 003 2353, or email janeandfee@times.radio, and we will announce the winner of that £250 Wix voucher at the end of the show. And don't forget, the Wix kitchen and bathroom sale is on now. Explore all the offers at wix.co.uk or visit the showroom in your local Wix store. Now, I've got to say, the weather is no joke today. There's been a red wind warning now issued for the southwest of England, which basically is that it's the highest you can get, isn't it? It's basically stay indoors, do not go anywhere, do not do anything.
It is battened down the hatches.
Yeah, it really, really is. So Storm Goretti is coming. There's no trains at all in Cornwall after 6 o'clock our time tonight. Well, Cornish time, it's the same time as us. So please do take care. I mean, I know people sort of laugh about the old health and safety thing, but this sounds pretty dicey, so please do stay in the warm if you can. And if you're in Cornwall, let us know how it is. 0333 003 2353. Now, our guest is Megan Harwood-Baines. She's senior money reporter for The Times, and she's made almost £1,000 in 2 years by clicking links. Her secret is getting cash back on everyday spending, from pet insurance to getting money back on her weekly shop. So, Megan, what made you want to try this? Because cashback's been around for a while, hasn't it?
It has. And I saw a couple of people posting about doing it on Instagram, the classic. And I just thought, oh, surely it can't be as easy as they're saying. I mean, it seems like any good scam, right? I tell you to click on a link and you're going to get free money. You immediately think, well, there's something wrong with that. I just started testing it. And yeah, within about 2 years, between me and my husband, we've made about £1,000. And it was crucially on things that we were buying anyway. So it wasn't anything that we weren't going to buy.
And that is important.
Yes. Yeah, that's very important.
Right. So how does it work?
So it's really easy. It depends on the app. My personal favourite at the moment is Top Cashback. You sign up, you make an account, put your email address in, you link your bank account. And then before you do your shopping, you search on their app for your retailer. And if they're offering cashback, they'll tell you how much. And you just click follow a link. It loads the retailer's website like normal. You place your order completely like normal. And then the time frames vary, but cashback then gets credited into your account that you can then withdraw.
Is there no catch at all here?
So the sites do make money.
Yeah, but how?
They don't make money from you, which is
right,
great.
Right.
So they will get a kickback from the retailer. So the retailer will give them commission for sending you to their site. The idea, I guess, being that it's encouraging you to shop with them. If you're like me, you were already going to shop with them, so it doesn't make much of a difference. They also might have adverts on the website. One of the apps I use, they take 30p every time you withdraw £10. So it's a very small little cut.
You could live with that, couldn't you?
Yeah, so they make money, but it's not from you.
Yeah, I mean, I suppose I wonder why more people don't know about those. Is it just that it's relatively time-consuming?
I think it has that perception. And whenever I talk to my friends about it, they laugh, but I'm constantly trying to get them to sign up to these sites because I just don't understand why you wouldn't. It seems time consuming. I think you just have to rewire how you're thinking when you're shopping. So now before I make any purchase, really, I'll think, well, I'm just going to check a couple of different apps, see what the rates are being offered, and then go from there.
Well, Steve is asking, what if a non-listed retailer is actually cheaper?
So I always double check the price as well. So I'll never use that to make the decision. It will never be dependent on...
It won't be the driver.
No, it won't be the driver. I mean, a lot of them, so for example, I get all my insurances whenever I renew them. You get, I think, you know, one I got recently was £40 for using Money Supermarket. So I was going to use a comparison site anyway, but by clicking through on Top Cashback, I got money for doing something that I was already going to do. And then I compared the list of retailers versus, you know, the ones on Money Supermarket, double-checked it was still the cheapest policy, and then got money on top.
It does sound remarkable and efficient. Viv says, I get cash back on both my credit cards. I pay them off every month, but I still get quite a reasonable cash back.
Yeah, I have a credit card that I use for almost all my monthly spending. It has a very low rate of cash back, but when you combine that with the cash back from other places, it all adds up. You know, there's that saying, look after the pennies and the pounds will look after themselves. And I really do think that's important.
Yeah, but the main thing, and you said it right at the start, is that you haven't spent money on anything you weren't already going to buy.
No.
So you don't lose out, you're not being conned.
No.
And you're just making, like you say, like a sequence of chunky, not enormous, but not nothing savings.
Some of them can be quite chunky. So my pet insurance, I've got three cats. One of them has a heart problem, so he's very expensive.
Sorry to hear that.
He's fine. But I always make sure I have quite extensive insurance every year. So it costs me £450 a year. This year I got £165 in cash back by getting what was already the cheapest policy. So I was going to buy that policy anyway, but I've basically got one cat for free just by using this website.
That's magic. Well, we're very pet positive. What's the name of the cat with the dicky ticker?
His name's Bobby.
Oh, Bobby.
Yeah, he's very anxious, bless him.
Well, aren't we all at the moment? Megan, thank you very much indeed.
Is Bobby likely to be listening now?
Oh, I'm sure he is. I leave the radio on for him at the day.
Very sensible. Well, he will have been delighted to hear your voice. That would be reassuring. Hello, Bobby.
Yeah, that was your mum, Megan Harwood-Baines, senior money reporter for The Times. Thank you, Megan.
Thank you.
Darren has sent us a little snapshot of his top cashback transactions, and he's got £26.73 pending. He's done ever so well. He's shopped at Currys, Holiday Extras, Jet2.com, and he's bought... Oh, he obviously bought just the one shirt from Charles. Can never pronounce it. Twit?
Twit. I think we just go for twit.
Twit.
Twerp.
Anyway, he says...
They're nice shirts.
Yep, sensible guy. I mean, it's not to be sniffed at, £26.73, for doing nothing if you were going to shop like Megan at those shops anyway.
Mm.
Well, don't say we don't try and do little things to help your life.
It's a world of wonder.
Yeah. Coming up, could architects be the leaders we've always needed? It's 2:31. Let's get the latest news with Andy Hayes.
Across the UK, on DAB, online and on your smart speaker, this is Times Radio.
Thank you, Fee. Good afternoon.
The government is going to drop planned increases in business rates for pubs. Ministers are expected to say they'll make changes to how pubs' rates are calculated. There have been protests from landlords and industry groups. More than 1,000 pubs have banned Labour MPs from their premises. The Mayor of London, Sir Sadiq Khan, says he's never agreed to or endorsed lower standards of vetting at the Metropolitan Police. A diversity panel overruled more than 100 decisions, admitting candidates who'd originally been rejected on safety grounds. Two rapists were among them. Australia is beginning a national inquiry into anti-Semitism following the mass shootings on Bondi Beach last month. Prime Minister Anthony Albanese has been outlining what he wants to happen.
Investigating the nature and prevalence of anti-Semitism, examining its key drivers in Australia, including religious and ideologically motivated extremism and radicalisation, because an attack on Jewish Australians is an attack on all Australians.
The report is due out on the 14th of December, the first anniversary of the massacre. A 24-year-old faces multiple charges of murder. And former Wales midfielder Terry Yorath has died at the age of 75. The father of TV presenter Gabby Logan played 199 times for Leeds United. He also had spells with Coventry, Tottenham and Bradford. And for a roundup of the news on demand, subscribe to the Times News Briefing on any podcast platform.
This is Times Radio.
I thought that I'd seen beauty. Then I sailed where icebergs gleam. I thought I'd witnessed nature, but this surpassed my dream. I thought that I'd known wonder, then sailed beneath these skies. I thought I'd seen the world until I opened my eyes. Change the way you see the world with HX Expeditions. Search Travel HX to discover more.
In areas overwhelmed by conflicts and natural disasters, we can't miss a life-saving moment. As a doctor with Médecins Sans Frontières, I've seen how a moment lost can mean a life lost. Right now, MSF is working across the globe, providing maternity care, containing outbreaks, performing vital surgeries. We can't miss a life-saving moment. MSF needs help. Your help. Every attack, disease, and natural disaster puts more people at risk and calls for our teams to go further and faster. Medical emergencies move quickly. So must we. £50 will keep our work going and make a life or death difference. The life-saving moment is now. To give £50, call 0800 055 7979. That's 0800 055 7979. Or search MSF Urgent. Thank you.
Daryl Morris brings you a first look at the Sunday Times front page splash. Saturday nights from 10:30.
Jane Garvey and Fee Glover on Times Radio with Wix. Rated excellent on Trustpilot. Book a free kitchen or bathroom design appointment and start your own excellent home transformation with Wix. Find your nearest showroom and book your appointment at wix.co.uk.
So it's Thursday. It means it's the Wix Proud as a Peacock Award. It gets awarded every Thursday afternoon. £250 in vouchers. You just have to tell us something that you've been proud of this week. I'm going to give Jane a long run up to this. She's going to bring us news from Glynn in a couple of moments' time.
Well, I may or may not.
After John Pienaar tells us what's on his show.
Hello, Fee. Hello, Jane. The shooting in Minneapolis of that woman shot in the face by an immigration federal agent. It's a big story and it's going to get bigger. And the significance is potentially enormous. The George Floyd shooting caused protests around the world. It was about racism in the police in America. This is basically about the tension between the Trump administration and political critics in cities and states in America, and the imposition of power on those states by Washington, as well as the case itself, which is being viewed by countless millions of people on social media. It's a horrible, horrible set of images. So I'm going to be talking about that with people on the ground and American players and pundits, and also Britain getting closer and closer to the United States, as we did over the tanker in the North Atlantic, but also build-up of American forces on British bases, and Britain just refraining from criticising President Trump or America over the American action in Venezuela. Are we getting close? Yes. Is there a risk to that? With Donald Trump, maybe yes. And I'm talking to some some military political figures about that.
Thank you very much, John. And we're going to talk to Lara Spirit, the Times' Washington correspondent, about the ICE shooting in Minneapolis just after 3 o'clock on this programme too. Can you cope with Glyn's message?
Well, we banned Glyn, didn't we? And then we reinstated him. I think he was banned again and now he's back. And he's very welcome. He often makes us laugh. He has a proud DIY moment to share. He got the curtain rail that he bought last September out of the garage. He measured it. He made a couple of random pencil marks in the wall. Then he sat down and decided he might need bigger screws. So he put everything away and had a cup of tea. Hashtag high performance, he says, with a cheeky reference to our award-winning interview with Jake Humphrey yesterday. Glyn, no, you haven't won the Wix voucher. I mean, I don't want to ruin your afternoon.
Not even a contender.
No, I mean, that's just rubbish.
Now, political parties are rallying their troops and lining up candidates for the 2028 London mayoral elections. But has the role in place since the year 2000 had its day? Well, Peter Murray is the co-founder of New London Architecture. He's announced his plan to run independently. He's focusing his campaign on improving the city's urban environment after Sadiq Khan looks set to miss his own affordable home building target. Pete, it's very nice to see you here in the studio. Thank you very much indeed for coming in.
Thank you.
Use us as your platform then. Tell us what you're going to stand on specifically.
Well, I've spent my life really involved with what I call the built environment sector, architects, builders, engineers, the people delivering housing, they're delivering infrastructure and all the things that a city like London needs. And, you know, we haven't been delivering enough, and particularly housing is the key issue. You know, how can we have an equitable city when we've got 65,000 people in temporary accommodation? And how can we have a successful city when we young people can't afford to live here? So we need to really make a move in terms of delivering more homes. You know, throughout the period, really, of the current mayoralty, the targets haven't been met. We've hardly met half the targets that we need to house Londoners. And so we need to do something which is fairly radical. And as you say, I've been working at New London Architecture, where we've been communicating with residents about what areas of London need in terms of new community accommodation, new places to live, new public spaces. And also, I have worked closely with the people delivering that. So I feel I can turn policy into practice and deliver the things that London needs to create a more livable city.
It seems to me, as somebody who's lived in London for 40 years, that one of the huge problems we face is the disparity between the top and the bottom of London now. And London has these wealthy pockets in it that are just astonishingly well off. And right next door to them will be people who are living, who seem to be almost invisible to those very wealthy people. Are we different as a city in that respect?
No, I think these are things that affect almost all large cities at the moment because there's been so much growth. You know, London's put on nearly 3 million people over 25 years, which is a massive change. We've accommodated it pretty well, but we haven't just delivered enough homes. And so we need to accelerate that, bring new ideas into delivering it. And, you know, one of the things that inspired me to take on this role is that I was on the board member for an organisation called Be First at Barking and Dagenham. Now, Barking and Dagenham is the poorest borough in London, but Be First, under a very inspiring leader there called Darren Rodwell, and also Lord Kerslake, who was a great champion for affordable housing, Barking managed to deliver more council homes than any other borough in London, and also at the same time created a planning department which went for something like 150th on the list of planning departments in the country to the top prize winner for the Royal Institute of Town Planning. So you can, with the right leadership and right policies, actually deliver accommodation, better places for even the poorest people in London.
Would you do anything about the way that London is structured in its borough makeup?
Well, I would say I'm going to be independent, so I'm going to be more of a pragmatist than a dogmatist. So I can work with all boroughs equally, so there's no party favouritism.
You're a man for all people, then.
for London for all people, indeed. But also, we may even in 2028 think we're going to have to deal with a different government as well. So all governments can be worked with at the same level as we do with boroughs.
What do you think happens to a city when you ignore the problems caused by bad housing?
People have miserable lives. There's been quite a lot of interesting work done on about the impact of temporary accommodation, in that if people haven't got a permanent address, they can't get a job. As soon as you start providing affordable housing for those people, they have an address, they get jobs, they start working in the economy, they actually put money back into the economy. And the cost-benefit analysis of more affordable housing is a very positive one. And if it was a road or something like that, the Treasury would be saying, oh yes, we can put more cars down here, we'll give you more roadway, which never works because all the cars fill the road and then you have to start again. Whereas with housing, we could deliver more affordable housing and get economic payback at the same time.
May I ask how old you are, please, Peter? You'll be put on the spot with these difficult questions when you're standing on the platforms.
Yeah, I'm 81.
Okay. Right. I mean, it definitely seems a good time to be an 81-year-old or a late 70-year-old man in the world. But realistically, to the younger generation, do you worry that when you are saying all of these things, which are of direct relevance to them, they're going to look at you and think, well, he's three generations away from me?
Yeah, I think that's a real point. So I am setting up a shadow cabinet of young, diverse Londoners who can contribute to the arguments. I can learn from them. They can learn from me, because I do think, age does bring a certain amount of knowledge and I hope wisdom at the same time. And I was lucky enough to experience swinging London and the Olympics, which seemed to me two high points in this wonderful city. Apart from those periods, it hasn't been promoted enough, needs more promotion. And I think that experience, combined with the fact that I've also seen five recessions, gives me that knowledge and, as I say, wisdom to make the right decisions to deal with changing economic circumstances.
Well, it's nice to hear somebody talking up London, actually, because there is a bit of a thing going on at the moment to talk it down and to say that there are whole no-go areas and we're all going to hell in a handcart.
Well, London has been top of the surveys. For the Resonance survey, which is probably the most comprehensive global survey of 100 top cities, London has been top this year, and it's based on livability, lovability and prosperity. So those are issues which we come out well against other cities. And I over the last year, I've visited a dozen or so big cities around the world just to see how mayors are operating. And London still comes out pretty well, whatever other candidates might say.
Thank you very much indeed for coming in. We will chart your progress with interest.
Thank you for inviting me.
Peter Murray is standing as an independent candidate, and Reform UK's mayoral candidate for London, Leila Cunningham, will be on Times Radio Breakfast tomorrow morning.
Right. But I agree with Peter. London is a great place.
Well, it is, isn't it? And it slightly breaks my heart when you read these pieces about how terrible it is.
Because it isn't. Right, let's talk about the weather, because it's no fun at all today. A rare red warning for dangerous stormy winds has been issued by the Met Office for Cornwall and the Scilly Isles. Now, this is Storm Goretti. It's bringing very strong winds, heavy snowfall and rain across large swathes of the UK. And, of course, there will be rail disruption. Now, Joe Wheeler is a meteorologist at Square Raindrop. So, Joe, a red warning, that's pretty rare, isn't it?
It is very rare, probably once a year, if that. In fact, over the last couple of years, I've only seen two. And after many, many years doing meteorology, virtually none. So this is big, big news. Now, if you remember back to 1987, where there was a hurricane, but there wasn't a hurricane, that was actually down to a sting jet, which is a very small area where suddenly these very strong winds lash down. And there's the potential for that tonight. But regardless of that, winds over parts of Cornwall could reach 80 to 90 miles per hour, which are more than capable of causing some devastating damage. And whilst thankfully very few people will be on holiday at the moment, taking out small craft or whatever, there will be an awful lot of boats in harbours and in marinas that, could be damaged. And, of course, any loose tiles in your house, well, you can say goodbye to those. Best thing to do in the next couple of hours, if you can, is secure them or bring them inside. But, of course, that's just Cornwall. That's a red warning. There are many warnings across the country, both yellow and amber. And those are for snow and rain. And this one's a little bit confusing, because quite often when we have cold air across the country, which we do at the moment, any change involves milder air running into that, which we are having at the moment. And, of course, it turns the snow on its front edge. But then the milder air continues and takes over. And this won't happen tonight, because as the milder air comes in with an awful lot of moisture in it, you'll see heavy snow followed by heavy rain. And then after that, heavy snow again, because the cold air comes back around. And so the cold air never goes away.
Right.
And as I say, you'll get that mixture of either snow, rain, snow, and the strong winds to go with it. Mostly across England and Wales. I think Scotland, Northern Ireland probably missing the worst of it. They will continue with some showers around. But again, the cold air never very far away. And once this system has passed, we get a bit of a respite on Saturday before further milder air tries to move in on Sunday, which again could bring us quite a big snow event. So if we just focus on tonight, because I think that's the important bit.
Yes.
A lot of this is going to happen overnight. So the winds pick up. The wind warning for Cornwall begins around 4 o'clock, continues into tomorrow morning. That system making its way northwards could deliver around 20 centimetres of snow for parts of the Peak Districts, the Pennines, much of the Midlands. So obviously travel first thing tomorrow morning is likely to be absolute chaos. It really is. And to go with that, you've got the strong wind. So where you get falling snow, you likely to get drifting as well.
I don't know what to say to that, really, Jo. It sounds blooming awful. OK, thank you so much for that. Very, very clear. And really, the message to anyone in Cornwall is, if you don't have to, just don't go out. Certainly don't go on the roads. Don't do anything, really. Just batten down your hatch, if you're lucky enough to have one, and stay by the fire.
I think that applies also to parts of the Midlands. And there has been some uncertainty about this track of this storm. It could be plus or minus 100 miles. Yeah, certainly that was the way things were, you know, into yesterday. So, you know, don't neglect, you know, northwestern parts of Cheshire. Yeah, further north on the Pennines. A lot of these areas will be impassable. They've already shut the Woodhead Pass, the Snake Pass, and one other, can't remember it. You know, a lot of the travel routes, certainly the higher travel routes, have already been shut. So, you know, do take care. Don't travel if you don't have to. You know, just keep yourself safe.
Thank you, Jo. Jo Wheeler, meteorologist at Square Raindrop.
We are 0333 003 2353 this afternoon if you'd like to be in with a chance of winning a £250 Wix voucher. Then you can simply tell us something that you are proud of. It doesn't have to be DIY related, although we know that the prize is DIY related. Wix would just like to hear something that has made you proud as a peacock this week.
Well, Ian's claiming that he changed an EasyJet flight. I mean, it's probably time consuming. Well, it was. He was on the line to a chatbot for nearly an hour. Does it deserve a voucher? I don't know. What do you think?
I'm not sure. Let's put it in the bag and be very fair about this. Yes. And take a look at the bag a little bit later.
Righty-ho. Right, on you go.
Coming up, we'll get a glimpse into this weekend's Times magazine with Jane Mulcairns. You're listening to Jane and Fee on Times Radio, 10 minutes to 3. We are with Wix. Book your free design appointment at wix.co.uk.
Times Radio Breakfast with Visit Scotland. Discover Times Radio's essential weekend briefing, where intelligent conversation meets incisive analysis of all the big stories making the headlines. Exploring the wider news agenda with guests from across politics, business, the arts and more. Times Radio Breakfast, Saturday and Sunday mornings from 6 with Visit Scotland. Start your story in Scotland with visitscotland.com/winter.
Visit Times Radio on YouTube for the latest videos and interviews.
Unfold a world of on-the-go entertainment with the Samsung Galaxy Z Fold 7. The massive 8-inch main screen means you'll see the bigger picture as every exciting moment unfolds. Share every highlight and keep the whole family entertained wherever you go. Buy yours now and claim £300 cashback. Conveniently available to spend in your Samsung wallet. Purchase before January 29th from a participating retailer. Claim on the Samsung website within 30 days of purchase. T's and C's apply.
Life is short. The world is big. See more of it with Wild Frontiers. Experience the soul of Georgia through traditional winemaking. Find your Zen on ancient pilgrimage routes in Japan.
or enjoy a 1,000-star experience in a yurt camp on the Silk Road. Wild Frontier's expertly crafted journeys take you further, so you can wander often, wonder always, and worry never. For small group tours and tailor-made adventures, visit wildfrontierstravel.com.
Jane Garvey and Fee Glover on Times Radio.
She's here, looking, I have to say, isn't she radiant?
Well, she is radiant, but can I also say, Jane Mulcairns, that you're looking, you're still festive.
Yeah.
You are wearing the festive red still.
Red isn't always festive, it's just red.
Well, that's
Ed
true.
Ed Fasey told me I looked like an elf the other day. I was wearing green.
You look like one of Santa's little elves. But there's nothing wrong with that. If you were listening to Times Radio over Christmas, and who wasn't, you will have heard. You will have heard, Jane.
You won't have escaped me. let's be honest.
I'm trying to think of a way of rephrasing that. But anyway, you are, and remain, can I say, associate editor at the Times magazine, as well as a brilliant broadcaster. And you come every Thursday into our studio and delight us with just a few tidbits about what is in the Times magazine. Now, this week, you always have great interviews, but this one is with Monica Lewinsky. Now, for younger listeners, who is Monica Lewinsky?
Monica Lewinsky is now a prominent anti-bullying campaigner and podcaster. She's 52, but when she was 22, she had an affair with Bill Clinton when she was an intern at the White House, and he was the most powerful man in the world. And so Monica Lewinsky would be known mainly by most people for that, because she became a tabloid fixture for several years, was pilloried, bullied, mocked, derided in the news and on late night sketch shows for many, many years. Then she disappeared for a while, tried to rebuild her life, but now, as I say, is a very prominent activist in terms of bullying and misogyny, and now has her own amazing podcast called Reclaiming.
And you met her?
I did.
And what's she like?
She's incredible. She's incredibly smart, hugely articulate, and also, in spite of everything that's happened to her, very open and honest and vulnerable and trusting. And I think that's why she's so good and her podcast has been such a success, because she's really, really good at intimate conversation with people, and she gives a lot of herself. She's warm, she's funny, witty, savage sense of humour, including a very self-deprecating sense of humour, and somehow has managed to come through everything that she's been put through very robustly.
Right, we can hear her voice, can't we? Would you like to... is a little bit from the interview. Just explain what we're about to hear.
Yeah, so I met her primarily because she's got this podcast now, and so she is doing the odd interview now and again. And it's 30 years since her affair with Bill Clinton started, and she's always maintained that it was consensual, but I was really interested in the fact that at 52, and with the passage of time, and not least Me Too happening in the intervening years, whether she sees her relationship with him any differently.
This was a gross abuse of power. Mm-hmm. It was a gross abuse of power, mm-hmm. Full stop. That doesn't mean I didn't make mistakes, that I didn't make wrong choices, that my behavior didn't impact negatively and hurt other people. And all of those things are true and are still true. But at the heart of it was a gross abuse of power.
I mean, I've been 22, I've been 52. There's a big, big difference.
There's a huge difference. And I think there's sort of two parts of that, which is that she's very honest about the fact that she was in love with him, and that at 22, what she thought their relationship might become was naive and very trusting. But he gave her reason to believe that it might be something. There were long late night phone calls. It wasn't just sex. They were close. I mean, it was a love affair for her. She was in love with him.
Yeah. All this time he had for these long late night phone calls, he was running the...
Well, there was a government shutdown for a while, Jane, which is how she ended up working so closely with him. But okay. but you're absolutely right. And I think the other thing is that, you know, she said she was sort of naive and in love and she was deluded, but she was also 22. But also with Me Too having happened, it's very interesting, because I think a lot of us have gone back to relationships or situations from our past with a very different lens through that. And there's interesting parallels from when I interviewed Stormy Daniels, who also always maintained that, obviously, a very different relationship with Trump. It was just one night in a hotel. But she'd also always maintained that that was consensual. And then when I interviewed her later, she said that after she watched Bombshell, a light went on with her, and she realised, because of the power dynamic, it might have been consensual, but it was hugely in unequal. Mm. And I think for Monica, that's also true, that she still maintains that it was consensual, but as she says, it was an abuse of power.
Well, here she is again, talking about the lasting impact of all this on her.
I kind of just wanted to get over with the first time I had sex post 98. I was like, oh, I just want to get it over with so that I know it's not a stigma that's with me for the rest of my life. But I do think the most powerful man in the world standing up and saying I didn't have sex with that woman was not only impacted me, but I think was a is in the air. You know, it gets taken in. So, but it's something I wonder sometimes about the impact it still has on me.
For our younger listeners, I should just also mention the Star report, which was basically Monica Lewinsky was forced to talk about every sexual interaction with the president in front of a grand jury, which was then turned into a 480-page document, the Star report, published online, still available. I mean, literally, the entirety of her sex life was made clear. For other people's really kind of unedifying entertainment and condemnation and titillation. And my question to her, which that was the answer to, was, what's it like being slut-shamed on a global scale? I mean, years before we even had a word for slut shaming.
Yeah, okay. Let's just hear a final little bit from Monica Lewinsky. Here she is talking now, and this is good, about why she's comfortable in her own skin.
My 50s have been fantastic.
And in what way?
Oh, I've just gotten so, I mean, I'm 52 now, and I've just gotten, I think there's so much acceptance. There's like a tidal wave of, like, that's just how I am and how I'm going to be. And it'll sort itself out, you know. So I think that sense of being comfortable with who I am as a person, as a woman, still trying to find my way in the world, still trying to make up for certain things, you know, that I lost of time.
Monica Lewinsky, she paid a terrible price. What price did President Clinton pay?
Well, I mean, she says he escaped a lot more than she did. One of her interviewees on her podcast put it really perfectly when she says, Bill Clinton got a presidential library, Monica Lewinsky got a punchline. And I think, you know, that's true. He, you know, he is still, when he left office in 2001, despite having been the centre of this scandal, he had the highest, second highest approval rating of any president ever.
Yeah. You sense, though, with, you know, recent developments, Epstein and everything else, that maybe Bill Clinton's image could be
a little bit tarnished, possibly. Well, yes. We do discuss that in the interview as well, which you'll be able to read tomorrow online and in the Times magazine on Saturday.
Yeah, I've been lucky enough to read it already. It's well worth a look. Thank you very much, Jane. Monica Lewinsky talking to Jane Mark-Herrins in the Times magazine over the weekend. Of course, you can read it online tomorrow.
Across the UK, on DAB, online and on your smart speaker. This is Times Radio, the voice of the times.
Well, all of that takes us to 3 o'clock. You're listening to Jane and Fee on Times Radio. Lara Spirit on the Washington reaction to the Minneapolis shooting in just a couple of moments' time. Back here, a U-turn on pub business rates. We're going to have a pint of that. And after 3:30, Rick Renton, actor, writer and former prisoner at HMP Durham, on how a dictionary changed his life. All of that after the news with Andy Hayes.
Thank you, Fee. Good afternoon. The government's expected to do a U-turn over planned rises to business rates for pubs. It follows a backlash from the industry. More than 1,000 pubs have banned Labour MPs from their premises. Chancellor Rachel Reeves is now pledging to give extra financial support to pubs on the brink of closure. The Times' chief political correspondent, Aubrey Allegretti, says she needs to act quickly.
This is an example of the government trying to listen to its backbenchers relatively swiftly. It's just that the clock is ticking, considering they come into force in April, and with most people's end of year taxes being paid by the 31st of January, that's the point in just a couple of weeks where some pubs and hospitality firms say they'll be on the brink of closure. So support from the Treasury, they argue, is needed imminently in the next week.
The Met Office has upgraded its wind warning for Cornwall and the Isles of Scilly from amber to red. It says Storm Gretti will bring dangerous stormy winds starting at 4 p.m. and continuing until 11 p.m. Forecasters say there's a danger to life. Joe Wheeler, a meteorologist at Square Raindrop, says a red warning is very rare.
Probably once a year, if that. In fact, over the last couple of years, I've only seen two, and after many, many years doing meteorology, virtually none. So this is big, big news. Winds over parts of Cornwall could reach 80 to 90 miles per hour, which are more than capable of causing some devastating damage.
Elsewhere, there could be up to 8 inches of snow over parts of Wales and the Midlands later. The Home Secretary says abandoning vetting checks on officers was a dereliction of the Met's duty to keep London safe. A diversity panel let people join the force despite earlier safety rejections. 25 went on to commit serious crimes, including rape. Roy Rams, a former commander at New Scotland Yard.
Can you imagine if you're a decent, honest police officer, and a new guy comes to your station or a new young woman comes to your station, and you do not know now whether they have been a convicted criminal? Who are you working alongside?
Shabana Mahmood is demanding an inspection into what went wrong. Hospitals are adapting temporary spaces with plugs and call bells as corridor care becomes more common. There are warnings about potential hazards, including more difficult monitoring, infection control and potentially a lack of oxygen. Dr. Ian Higginson is president of the Royal College of Emergency Medicine.
We can't look after our patients properly from either a human point of view or from a clinical point of view. There's no privacy, there's no dignity. We can't get at them to do what we need to. We can't examine them properly. So it should be really obvious that we cannot deliver proper care in corridors.
The government says it's working with NHS Trust to end corridor care. And former Premier League referee David Coote has avoided jail after being sentenced over a sexual video of a schoolboy found on his laptop. Nottingham Crown Court heard the footage was Category A and showed a 15-year-old boy in school uniform. Coote was sentenced to 9 months in prison, suspended for 2 years. And for a roundup of the news on demand, find the Times News Briefing on the Times Radio app.
Across the UK, on DAB Digital Radio, on the Times Radio app, online and on your smart speaker. Jane Garvey and Fee Glover on Times Radio with Wix Kitchens and Bathrooms.
We've got a wide variety of approaches for the Wix Prouders a Peacock Award this afternoon, and we're enjoying all of them. It's 0333 003 2353 for your chance to win £250 in Wix vouchers.
Which is excellent. You can get a lot done with £250 at Wix. I mean, some of you are not taking it entirely seriously.
But we don't mind that. It's a Thursday. No. I think we quite welcome it.
A bit lax on a Thursday.
And it is quite a dark and depressing world out there, isn't it? It's 4 minutes past three. It's Jane and Fee with you until 4 o'clock this afternoon. We are going to talk about redemption, actually. A really interesting story from Rick Renton, who's a writer and actor, but in his youth he was a troubled adolescent, and by the time he was 19 years old he found himself serving time in a prison in Durham. But his life changed when he was given a dictionary whilst in jail, and he is now an award-winning writer. You can see him perform as well in a new BBC series. He writes and stars in Waiting for the Out. So we'll talk more to Rick after 3:30 this afternoon. Over in America, protesters have been gathering in Minneapolis after a US immigration agent shot and killed a 37-year-old woman. Footage of the killing appears to show law enforcement officers surrounding Renee Nicole Good's car and opening fire as she tried to drive away. Christy Noem, the Homeland Security Secretary, says the woman drove at the officers and that the actions were an act of domestic terrorism. Well, let's talk to the Times' Washington correspondent, Lara Spirit. A very good afternoon from us in London, Lara. I mean, those are two completely different interpretations of a series of events that was filmed by passers-by. Can you just fill us in on what you believe you have witnessed via that film?
Yes, so already the battle lines on what that footage shows have been very clearly drawn and down very neat party lines, we should say. So if you are a Democrat, a Democrat like Tim Walz, for example, the governor of Minnesota and, of course, a former vice presidential candidate, or if you're Jacob Frey, the mayor of Minneapolis, then you would say that there is a propaganda machine, from what we've seen in this video, that is trying to make it look as if this woman was risking the life of those ICE agents who were asking her to get out of the car, and that any claims to the contrary are incorrect. And if you are President Trump or J.D. Vance, or indeed Kristi Noem, as you heard from there, the Homeland Security Secretary, then you would say this is, as you've just said, an act of domestic terrorism is the allegation that Noem has levelled, that these agents were acting in self-defence, and that in the words of J.D. Vance, the officer was defending his life against a deranged leftist who tried to run him over. Now, I'm sure that many of your listeners have watched the footage, and there are a number of different videos. I think I've seen three different videos of the incident, in which you can see that a woman is being asked to come out of her car, that ICE officers are asking her to get out, and that she moves the vehicle either to try and evade them, or in the case of what they are alleging, to threaten them or to put them at risk in some way, at which point the ICE, one of the officers fires, I think it's three shots, which have, you know, very unfortunately killed her. And she was, you know, found dead at the scene, declared dead later in hospital. So this is an event, as you say, there are protests there, at the scene. There are public schools across the city that are closed. This happened just four blocks away from where George Floyd was murdered, of course, setting off a wave of racial justice protests across the US. So this is a city that is has been before reeling from unrest and is poised for further unrest now. Now, and the National Guard, Tim Walz said yesterday, have been, you know, put on alert. There's warning that's gone out that suggests that they may well be called upon at some point.
It does appear that she was shot through a side window, and obviously our listeners this afternoon can make an interpretation and use their brains to work out what that might mean. What do we know about this woman who has been killed, Lara?
Yes, so we know that she was a 37-year-old woman. We know that she had moved from a city in Missouri, from Kansas City to Minneapolis just last year. And we've had a number of family members who have spoken to various news outlets in the US to, you know, talk about what she was like. Her name was Renee Nicole Goodge, 37-year-old, and she was at the wheel of that Honda Pilot when she attempted to drive away. And her ex-husband, who has asked not to be named, said that she had a six-year-old child, that she'd also got two children from her first marriage that were aged 15 and 12, described her as a devoted Christian. She travelled to Northern Ireland, apparently, when she was younger on youth missions, that she loved to sing. She was in a chorus in high school and she later studied vocal performance at college. And various members of her family have disputed the idea that she might be a sort of activist. So the mother of Renee, Donna Gaines, just said that she was one of the kindest people she'd ever known. She was extremely compassionate. And she said it was so stupid that she was killed when she was informed of the circumstances of the shooting, saying she was probably terrified. So at this moment, I think it's really important to say that there is an investigation going on about the circumstances of this. You have had some in the Trump administration. So Tom Homan, Trump's border czar, who initially said that he wanted to withhold judgment about exactly what happened. He later appeared to weigh in on the side of President Trump and J.D. Vance, who have clearly made up their minds already. But there need to be, of course, the establishment, many people think, of further facts before we can make any firm judgment about what happened.
Yes, of course, you're absolutely right. Where is President Trump today, Lara?
So he has a number of private meetings today in the White House. We'll be seeing him on Fox News at 9 p.m. tonight. That's 9 p.m. U.S. time, I should say. So very late into the evening for you in London. And I'm sure at some point we will hear further from him. He was very quick to respond to this, saying that it was, you know, a vicious event. He'd also given further comments to the New York Times in a long interview that he gave yesterday, which further reiterated his position that he felt that this was an act of self-defense from the officer, and that the woman had clearly been posing a danger to those who were on the scene with her. So you've definitely heard Trump's position loud and clear. Whether or not you'll hear anything more from him on this today, I think remains to be seen.
And Lara, can you just put into context for us how these raids being done by ICE are going down across America? I mean, there is a considerable amount of anxiety about them, isn't there? But also from some political quarters, quite a lot of pride about them.
Yes. So this has obviously been one of the more controversial aspects of the second Trump administration, a huge and sweeping domestic border campaign and immigration crackdown, particularly in some of these bigger cities. It's become very tense, especially when you have local leaders. So we've seen this in Chicago, where I was in September, covering a big immigration crackdown where Trump wanted to put the National Guard in there to join those ICE agents. But there was a huge amount of legal action around that. But the ICE campaign itself was something that was hugely polarizing in the country, of course, neatly down party lines, but has also been something that local Democratic leaders and particularly mayors and governors have been fighting tooth and nail to try and resist. And you heard a very expletive-laden statement from the Democratic mayor of Minneapolis yesterday, which asked ICE to get out of the city, and also from Tim Walz, the governor of Minnesota, who was very clear. He said, "I have a simple message. We do not need further federal support here." So this is not the first clash, nor is it, of course, the first shooting that ICE has been involved in since the beginning of this crackdown. I think, you know, there's a number of statistics on this. So in the last 4 months, immigration officers have fired on at least 9 people. At least 5 have died since the start of this broader crackdown. And that, of course, includes an individual who was killed in Chicago in September. And as in that Chicago shooting, claims that the agent acted in self-defense by, you know, the Trump administration have been hotly contested. So this is not going away.
Sure. Lara, for the moment, thank you very much indeed. The Times' Washington correspondent Lara Spirit there. Well, away from all of that, yesterday the White House ordered the seizure of 2 oil tankers linked to Venezuela. One of them was seized with British help, and while Russian naval vessels were apparently on their way to guard it. Have we heard any more about this? The tanker was part of Russia's so-called shadow fleet. Richard Mead is the editor-in-chief of the shipping newspaper Lloyd's List, which has been tracking the ships making up the fleet. Richard Mead, a very good afternoon. What makes this a shadow fleet? Can you explain the concept of that term?
Yes, good afternoon. Thank you for having me. The shadow fleet is, there is no singular definition, but generally when we're talking about the shadow fleet, these are ships that are opaquely owned. They're very old. They have questionable insurance. And essentially they have grown around economic sanctions being leveled against Russia, but also Iran and Venezuela and various other countries that are subject to international sanctions. And essentially these are ships with plausible deniability, I guess. They are ships where you're not entirely sure who owns them, where they are registered, and they allow these countries to essentially circumnavigate economic sanctions and get their oil to the customers.
Can any ship, once it's in international waters, change the flag that it's sailing under, Richard? Or is that the whole point of this? That's the bit that would be against the law?
Well, against which law is the question? The international maritime law that is applicable here is the UN Convention of the Law of the Sea. That is probably something that I don't think was being looked at too closely yesterday in terms of the actions both of the US and of Russia. I mean, technically, when you reflag a ship into another state, you should be doing things like inspections. You should be looking at certification and insurance. The fact that they changed flag from an entirely fraudulent Guyanese register to the Russian flag mid-journey whilst being chased across the Atlantic by US Coast Guard suggests that they probably hadn't done a huge amount of due diligence on this ship. This was more of a political switch, I would argue.
Right. I think you're the master of the understatement, and we're going to enjoy that. All of this, though, does make a mockery of sanctions, doesn't it? What is the solution to constantly board these vessels?
Well, it's an interesting one. I think The reason why everybody was so interested in the ship yesterday, other than the obvious drama, is what we've seen from the Shadow Fleet over the last 4 to 5 months is a gradual shift away from fake certificates, fake flags. There's been a bit of a boom industry in shipping of late, creating entirely fraudulent ship registries purporting to represent governments that have absolutely no idea that they're flagging these ships. And that was the case with the Bella One, or the Marinera as it then became. What's interesting is they are now going to the Russian flag, and Marinera was not alone. We've seen around 40 ships over the last few months head towards Russia. And the assumption being there that they were going to get a bit more protection. They were going to, have the flag of the Russian sovereign state flying on their ship, and therefore they wouldn't be messed with. That's proven to be a little bit wrong. As much as the Russian Transport Ministry put out a statement saying that this was entirely illegal and, they were huffing and puffing and making some various noises, they had a submarine on standby. They had a frigate in the area. This was a very muted response from Russia. So it would appear that they're not that willing to go out and protect the Shadow Fleet directly. So I think it's going to be an interesting few weeks as we see what happens to those sanctioned vessels in the Shadow Fleet that are operating. I think, the enforcement from the US, but also from the EU and the UK, is tightening the noose around these ships and what they can and can't do. So it's going to be interesting to see how they respond. The reality is, though, that while China and India are prepared to take in discounted crude from Iran, from Venezuela, from Russia, there will be a way around it. The whole point of the Shadow Fleet is that it is a way of getting around economic weaponry and sanctions, and trade is like a water table. It's porous. It will find a way around it eventually.
Yeah. And sailing the high seas has always been a slightly dangerous thing to do. It's always had a layer of criminality and misdeeds going on around it. And do you think that this crosses another kind of Rubicon, though? We're entering, I'm going to say it, uncharted waters.
Yes.
I actually didn't mean to say that, and then suddenly the sentence just headed out there of its own accord.
It comes out a lot.
Yeah.
We're not allowed to use it, but you are. It's fine. It's an interesting question. There has, as you say, always been, an underbelly of substandard shipping out there, and criminality exists. We know that. But I think there has been a real step change with the volume of sanctions. We have always seen some element of a shadow fleet operating, but the volume of sanctions being leveled against Russia and Iran is like nothing we have ever seen. As I said at the beginning, there is no singular definition of the shadow fleet, but by the definition we use, around 20% by tonnage of the existing tanker fleet afloat, globally speaking, is engaged in shadow fleet operations in one way or the other. So this is not a few ships. We're talking about hundreds and hundreds of ships that are operating globally. And the effect of sanctions has been to essentially push these ships out of the rules-based norm of insurance, of registration, of basic safety standards. The unintended consequence of all this has been to undermine maritime safety. When we get an Exxon Valdez or a Prestige or an Erica type of oil spill, and we will, because these are old, dangerous ships, I don't know who is going to be responsible for clearing them up, because these are now operating outside of the rules-based order. Yeah. We don't know if they're insured.
That is a terrifying prospect. Thank you very much indeed. Richard Mead is the editor-in-chief of the shipping newspaper Lloyd's List. So 20%, Jane, one in five. Yep, that is extraordinary.
Right, we're just discovering so much more about this world, this watery world of which we knew nothing. I haven't forgotten Uncharted Waters, by the way. You won't be allowed to forget that. Absolutely. I'm going to write a letter of complaint to somebody.
Send it to the BBC.
Okay, yeah. Right, coming next on Times Radio, a U-turn on business rates. Could there be good news for pubs? I mean, you don't often get U-turns with this government. I think we could be in line for another one. It's Jane and Fee on Times Radio with Wicks, the experts in kitchens and bathrooms.
Kate Borsay on Times Radio.
We'll look at the latest on the United States refashioning of the global order. And as the US continues to explain its strategy in South America, we'll speak to Kevin Whitaker, a former US ambassador to Colombia, who was personally accused accused of trying to help topple the Maduro government in 2014. Plus, our newsmaker interview is one of NATO's Deputy Assistant Secretary Generals, James Apathurai, was told by Vladimir Putin that he wanted NATO to disappear.
Kate Borsay, tonight from 7 on Times Radio.
Hear that? It's your big McDonald's hunger calling, because the Big Arch is back, and this time it's here to stay. With juicy beef, cheddar cheese, and that Big Arch sauce. Hungry? You are now. Order delivery on the McDonald's app. Serve from 11 a.m. Upcharges and fees apply to delivery orders. Subject to availability, price and participation may vary.
I thought I'd seen it all, then felt myself awaken. I thought I'd witnessed beauty before my breath was taken. I thought that I'd known wonder, then sailed beneath these skies. I thought I'd seen the world until I opened my eyes. Change the way you see the world with HX Expeditions. Search Travel HX to discover more.
It might be mid-winter, but there's nothing mid about this offer. The new Samsung Galaxy S25 Ultra brings every winter sport moment to life, as crisp as freshly laid snow. With its stunning 6.9-inch dynamic AMOLED display, razor-sharp resolution. But here's the real win. Claim £250 cashback. Conveniently available to spend in your Samsung wallet. Purchase before January 29th from a participating retailer. Claim on the Samsung website within 30 days of purchase. T's and C's apply.
Listen to Times Radio on your DAB digital radio.
Jane Garvey and Fee Glover on Times Radio with Wickes Kitchens. The kitchen sale is now on. Plan your new kitchen with an expert design consultant. Hurry, the early bird discount ends soon. Browse all the kitchen offers at wickes.co.uk. Terms apply.
Now, together with Wickes, we want to know your proudest moment of the week to be in with a chance of winning a £250 Wickes voucher in our Wickes Peacock Awards. I like Philippa, who's just got a very straightforward approach. Wickes vouchers, they'd come in handy for the next project. I've just moved house. I mean, that's just simple, isn't it?
Yeah, I like that too.
Yeah. Well done, Philippa. This from Kelly and the boys. I want to nominate myself and my two sons, Callum and Logan. This is something very different. This year, we were able to rehome three hens, safe from a farm that was going to send them to slaughter. We've rehomed them with a wonderful charity called BHWT, who are trying to save hens all over the country. Me and my boys have set up our own coop and run. We've studied and learned all about the hens and what they need to thrive. And they even have their own Insta account, so we can share their progress and encourage others to rehome. We're so proud of what we've achieved. Oh, listen to this. Seeing our girls feel the sun for the first time, eat fruit and veggies for the first time, it's just made the whole thing so worthwhile. And she's got a great outline. We might not be peacocks, but we're hens who are very proud indeed. It's going to be very hard to resist that one, but that's another entry. If you want to take part, you could win a 250 quid Wickes voucher here. Send us a WhatsApp on 0333 003 2353, or you can also sneak in an email, janeandfee@times.radio, and we will announce the winner at the end of the show. And don't forget, the Wickes Kitchen and Bathroom Sale is on now. Explore all the sale offers at wickes.co.uk or visit the showroom in your local Wickes store.
Make a U-turn. Make a U-turn.
Yeah. Thank you. Yes. The government has, I mean, in fairness, it does quite a lot. But this is about the increase in business rates for pubs. It's now, we're told, expected to be watered down. Now, this follows campaigning by landlords, the pub industry, and quite a lot of MPs worried about the impact on their constituencies. In the last hour, the Conservative leader, Kemi Badenoch, has been giving her thoughts on the reports of this government U-turn.
Over Christmas, Labour MPs were banned from every single pub they tried to get into. They've come back and realised that nobody likes them, so now they're pushing for a U-turn. We told them this when Rachel Reeves put out that budget. I told her on that day that she was not doing right by pubs. We have a much better plan, and that is to slash business rates for all of the high street, not just pubs, because what they're doing, if they do do it, won't be enough. All of the high street, if your rates are less than £110,000, Conservatives will scrap your business rates on the high street.
Kemi Badenoch, leader of the Conservative Party. Tom Stainer is chief executive of the Campaign for Real Ale. Tom, are you celebrating?
Well, we need to see the detail before we raise the glass too high, to be honest. But, you know, this has got to be welcomed as good news. The government has listened to the huge amount of support for pubs over the last couple of weeks and have indicated that they are prepared to make a change and support these vital community locals.
What were you hearing from your members about the possible impact of this?
Well, our members are consumers. They're people who love pubs and love drinking Great British Beer in pubs. So their biggest fear is that publicans would have to pass on any increased costs in running their pubs to the people who drink in them. And pints are already, you know, getting much too unaffordable for most drinkers. So the fear for our member was first of all, that the price would go up in their local pub. And the other huge fear is obviously that this would force so many more pubs to close and those great locals we all love around the corner just disappearing for good.
Yeah. It's, I suppose it does illustrate that there's a certain naivety, really, apparently at the heart of this administration, that they didn't quite see the implications of this. What do you think?
There's been a lot of talk about whether this was cock-up or conspiracy. I think we veered more towards the cock-up. They hadn't quite realised the impact of the changes they're making and the revaluation of businesses. And therefore, it was never going to achieve their promised aim of permanently reducing business rates. But going back even before we talk about discounts and COVID and all the rest of it, this was already an unfair system where bricks and mortar businesses that invest in their local communities are running expensive businesses to run because they've got to have lots of staff, they've got to have big buildings, they've got big energy costs, are paying disproportionate amounts of business rates compared to online-based or big warehouse businesses. So fundamentally, the system was broken even before you started getting into the complexities of COVID discounts and all the rest of it. And that's what we've always called for and what the hospitality industry has called for, is a proper root and branch reform of business rates so that it can help support the businesses at the heart of communities that are really delivering investment and employment and bringing money into local economies rather than sucking money out of it.
What do you think of the notion that, in fact, this quite spirited campaign to ban Labour MPs from pubs has apparently paid off?
Well, much I hate to disagree with the Leader of the Opposition, I think there's only about 1,000 pubs that actually involved themselves in this campaign. And I think it did a great job in getting profile and publicity for the campaign. But I think ultimately it's far better to welcome people into pubs, show them just how good they are, say to your local MP of whatever political persuasion, come in, see what we deliver, see what our customers get out of this pub, and have a conversation with them rather than shutting the door on them and saying, we don't want to talk to you. And I think most pubs took that approach, which is actually constructively, you know, having conversations with politicians and their local MP and saying, you need to support us for these very good reasons, and there needs to be a fair system, and we need to be able to allow to operate as viable businesses and deliver these great community benefits.
I appreciate that your job is with Camra, but I mean, would you ever conceive of running a pub? It strikes me as one of the most challenging things to do, even in good economic times.
Yes, I get asked this quite a lot, and I think there's a sort of roses around the door image of running a pub. It's this wonderful thing to do. If you know anything about hospitality, if you are tangentially involved with pubs like I am, you know just how much hard work it is. It's early mornings, it's late finishes, it's lugging barrels around. It is not an easy job, and the people who do it are to just be admired because they deliver so much to their regulars, and they put so many hours in, and they get very little reward for it.
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned regulars. It's just dealing with the general public. That's one of the reasons I couldn't run a pub, is that all those members of the public, and they'd always be complaining. You tell me, have you got a great local and you're always in there and you're always incredibly grateful? I'm sure you are.
I do have a fantastic local, actually. My teenage son now works in it. We've been going there for 20 years. It's a great example of a community pub where everyone's welcome. You always get a good welcome. I rarely hear people complain, but it's a very good pub. And it just embodies the best of pubs. It brings people together. It's democratic. It doesn't matter who you are, what you do, how much you earn, you're welcome in those sort of pubs. And it's a place you can go and get a sense of the community you live in.
You better name it, Tom.
It's called the Pomfret Arms in Northampton.
Lovely. Thank you very much indeed. Tom Stoner, Chief Executive of the Campaign for Real Ale.
Wouldn't you like to, at some stage, though, be able to shout at a recalcitrant punter?
Yeah, I really would.
Yeah.
No, obviously. That's the only reason I would run a pub. So I could say that.
I think it's reason enough. That takes us to 3:30. Coming up, we're going to hear from today's big guest, Rick Renton, on the new BBC prison drama, Waiting for the Out. We will also announce the winner of the Wicks Proud as a Peacock Award for this week. All of that happens after a check on the latest news headlines with Andy Hayes.
Across the UK, on DAB, online and on your smart speaker, this is Times Radio.
Thank you, Fee. Good afternoon. The government's expected to do a U-turn over planned rises to business rates for pubs. It follows a backlash from the industry. More than 1,000 pubs have banned Labour MPs from their premises. The Met Office has upgraded its wind warning for Cornwall and the Isles of Scilly from amber to red. It says Storm Gretty will bring dangerous stormy winds starting at 4 p.m. and continuing until almost midnight. Forecasters say there's a danger to life. Also up to 8 inches of snow are forecast. Steph Gota, meteorologist at Square Raindrop, has the geographical detail.
The main area of snow is going to be over parts of Wales and generally the Midlands. That's where we're going to see a lot of wintry weather. That's where we could see the 10 to 15 centimetres quite widely. And then some areas could see 20 to 30 centimetres of snow. And of course, that will cause major disruption.
The Mayor of London, Sir Sadiq Khan, says he's never agreed to or endorsed lower standards of vetting at the Metropolitan Police. A diversity panel overruled more than 100 decisions, admitting candidates who'd originally been rejected on safety grounds. Two rapists were among them. And former Wales midfielder Terry Yorath has died at the age of 75. The father of TV presenter Gabby Logan played 199 times for Leeds United. He also had spells with Coventry, Tottenham and Bradford. And for a news bulletin when you want it, search for the Times News Briefing on any podcast platform.
This is Times Radio.
Cancer Research UK is funding the breakthroughs that matter. Did you know that over the past 50 years, their work has helped double cancer survival in the UK? Cancer Research UK science expert Dr. Sam Godfrey talks about the breakthroughs that could change the lives of people affected by cancer.
One of the breakthroughs that I'm so excited about is that our scientists discovered that the human papillomavirus actually caused almost all cervical cancers and a number of other cancers too. This has meant we've been able to develop a vaccine, and that is now expected to prevent almost 90% of cervical cancers in the UK. With screening as well, we think we're going to get to a point where we can stop almost all cervical cancers, and we're going to see a future where cervical cancer is effectively eradicated. It's such an exciting thing, and it just scratches the surface of what really is the golden age of research.
Witness more incredible research breakthroughs in Cancer Detectives, Finding the Cures, brought to you by Cancer Research UK. Stream now on Channel 4. Cancer Research UK is a registered UK charity.
If you could sail anywhere in the world, where would you go? With Oceania Cruises, our small luxurious ships allow us to dock in boutique ports in 600 stunning destinations. We offer a more immersive experience and a personalized service, creating unique travel memories. From the Caribbean to the Mediterranean and the finest cuisine at sea, it can only be Oceania Cruises. Visit oceaniacruises.com or your travel agent.
Daryl Morris brings you a first look at the Sunday Times front page splash every Saturday night from 10:30.
Jane Garvey and Fee Glover on Times Radio with Wicks Kitchens. Choose from over 80 kitchen styles. Whether it's your first home or your forever home, find your dream kitchen at Wicks. Prices start from under £3,000. Book your free design appointment at wicks.co.uk.
Now, Rick Renton's life story is worthy of a TV series itself. Arrested about 30 times before he was 18, he left school in the northeast with no GCSEs, and by the time he was 19, he was serving time in Durham Prison. But we meet him now as a sought-after playwright and writer, one of the stars of a new TV series called Waiting for the Out. The show is based on a book by Andy West, who spent time in prison but now teaches philosophy to prisoners. And it chucks out the stereotypes of prison drama and tells us from experiences like Rick's about how a life inside might be transformed. Here's a clip featuring Rick as Wallace sitting in a philosophy class in prison, considering the meaning of freedom.
So there's the men with wax in their ears, there's Odysseus, and there's the man who jumped. Who is the most free?
The men with wax in their ears.
Why?
Because they just got on with it. It's like us, right? I've got freedoms that people on the out haven't. Don't have to pay bills, don't have to go shopping, don't even have to find a dentist. I'm totally free of choice.
But doesn't your lack of choice mean that you're not free?
2 weeks ago there was a lockdown. 23 hours a day bang up, 1 hour soosh. You know what I did with my hour? Stayed in me pad, sat in me bunk, and read.
Jesus.
Because I could.
That's depressing, man.
I'm not like you, who's always clowning around. I focus on my daughter. I focus on being a dad.
Yeah, that's nice, Wallace, but you got engaged, man. Freedom isn't hiding.
Well, when Rick left prison, he knew that he'd found his creativity for real, not just in fiction. He had started writing on the inside and it paid off on the outside. In 2022, his autobiographical stage play, One Off, was staged at Newcastle's Live Theatre. That led to being selected for the BBC Voices Writer Room, and he then joined the team for Waiting for the Out, which is led by Dennis Kelly, the writer behind TV successes like Utopia. Well, Rick came into Times Towers earlier. I asked him to tell me more about a pivotal moment in his life when he was put in solitary confinement in jail after a fight.
Well, it was paramount to the place that I've arrived at today when I was in the hole, as they called it, and I was offered a Bible. And for some, I call it ironic now, but it's like divine intervention, where I just had this idea to ask for a dictionary, because I thought if I don't leave prison any better than I came in, then my time was useless. And so I sat in the hall for 3 weeks and I read the dictionary from A to M, and then I finished it when I was put back into general population. And it was one of the best decisions I ever made.
3 weeks in solitary confinement. What happens to your brain, your mind, your senses during that time?
Well, it's mundane, you know. They take your mattress away at 6 o'clock in the morning, and they give it back at 8 o'clock in the evening. And the only place to sit was there was two slabs of metal welded into the wall, and they were perfectly aligned. So the only option was to sit with your spine perfectly straight for 10, 12, 14 hours, or to sit in the corner. I had to sit in the corner. And you know, it's not fun, it's not glamorous, and it was challenging, you know. It was challenging.
Can you tell us a bit about your sentence and what you were in prison for?
Yeah, of course. I was put in prison for 3 years on a trilogy of drugs charges. So I was convicted of selling cocaine and ecstasy, of which I was 100% guilty.
And you had had it's a terrible kind of trite saying, isn't it? You'd had a slightly troubled adolescence, so education hadn't surrounded you before you went to prison, had it?
No, I wasn't an academic by any stretch of the imagination. I wasn't particularly enthused by school. I had a tricky childhood growing up, but I wouldn't change it.
So how does that youngster who, you know, presumably didn't thrive at school, maybe you bunked off a lot or whatever, you know, when you find yourself in a really challenging situation in solitary confinement in prison, somebody's given you a dictionary, just talk us through how you then decide that you're going to be able to change your life. Because to some people, Rick, a dictionary would just be a series of words, but it wasn't just a series of words to you, was it?
No, not at all. I felt something as soon as I got to Aardvark, as soon as I got to Abdicate, as soon as I got to, like, right through the A's, I felt something come alive in me, you know, and I knew in that moment that I fell in love. I fell in love with language because I learned that I understood so much that I'd never ever come across before.
Have you got a favourite letter?
Letter?
Yeah.
I don't have a favourite letter, but I do love words that finish with G-L-E. Inveigle, beguile, finagle.
Okay, a gull.
Yeah, Google, yeah. For some reason, they were the ones that, like finagle, I was like, oh, it's such a beautiful... It rolls off the tongue. It's gorgeous, you know? Beguile, mystery. For some reason, that's my thing, but I don't have a favourite letter, but all my favourite words end with GLE.
Absolutely brilliant. You're giving me the tingles. There you go. How much longer did you have of your sentence to serve after that episode of solitary confinement and learning the love of the words?
I would say probably a year, year and a half.
And was it very much a change, Rick, who went back into the main prison? I mean, did it genuinely enable you to think differently about what life would be like when you left prison?
No. No. I changed mentally. There was something inside me that switched, but never in a million years could I have imagined that this would be my trajectory.
Mm. When you left prison, I mean, people often talk about that as an incredibly unsupported time in their lives. Quite a lot of prisoners come out and are given an £85 allowance.
Is that how much they get now, is it?
Yes.
How 20 much? Quid an hour.
20 quid, okay. So you leave prison with 20 quid. What did you do? Where did you go?
Back to Newcastle. Straight out of the town, you know. I would love to tell you it was something profound or prophetic, but it was, you know, I went straight back out in the city.
What's the prejudice like for somebody who tries to apply for a job and tries to start again after prison?
That I can't speak to. So I was, one of the things that I was committed to when I was inside was I never wanted to go back. And I wanted to get a job. And so I applied for dozens and dozens of jobs. And I was hired 4 different times and fired 4 different times on the basis of my history. So they would do a DBS check within 24 hours, and they were like, oh, you've just got out of prison. I was like, well, yeah, but you've hired me on the merit of who I am and what I've presented to you, you know, so that surely should stand for something, but it didn't.
Mm.
And that was rough, and that I actually ended up leaving the country.
So you went to Dubai, didn't you?
For 7 years, yes. Yeah.
Where you found it easy to get work.
Easier than England, aye.
Yeah. How do we find you here then as one of the writers of this absolutely cracking BBC drama? What's enabled you to now be talking to us today as a writer and an actor and, I mean, a success, actually, a real proper success?
Tenacity. Tenacity and never quitting.
Who gave you a break in terms of writing?
Synergy Theatre Company, Payne's Plough, or Dennis Kelly, you know, like, I'm not here just on the back of my own effort. I'm here because of a collaboration of different people, you know, people who've supported us, believed in us.
Tell us a bit more about Dennis Kelly and tell us a little bit more about this production.
You know, I was a fan of Dennis's for so many years, and when I found out that he was in charge of this project, it was just a dream come true. It was a dream come true, and he's one of the funniest, most humble men and talented beyond belief.
How did the writing of Waiting for the Out actually happen? Because it's quite a collaboration, isn't it?
Massively.
Yes, yeah. So tell us about that.
So we spent a couple of weeks in the writer's room. Me, Levi, and Dennis, and we're just bouncing back ideas about, like, the themes of the show, you know, like, about masculinity, about what it means to be a man today in modern times, and also what it means to be a convict, an ex-convict. And one of the most beautiful about the room was all of us got really vulnerable, and I think that's one of the most important things that can be said about today, is that we should share, men in particular, we should share and we should be open and we should be vulnerable. And I love that about the room, is that each one of us was really, really open about our feelings and about what it meant that was important to us about the show.
I don't want to give away what happens to your character in the show, so we're not going to talk too much about Wallace and his daughter, because mm-hmm. I think, we should allow the audience to really be taken on that journey. Mm-hmm. But the thing that is surprising that has been much commented on is the way that you are telling a different story about prison, actually, that seems to avoid a cliche of solid violence, mm-hmm. solid pain, solid despair. I mean, you are very deliberately showing intelligent men who've missed opportunities in life try to get their heads around themselves, aren't you?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, something that always struck me about when I was inside was there was never a shortage of intelligence in there. You know, like, it was misguided. It was misdirected. But there was never a shortage inside of there, and I think that's important to show. Like, one of the things I love about Andy's book, A Life Inside, and I love about the show, is this is, there's no cliches in this. It's like nothing I've ever seen before. It doesn't use the sugar syrup. Or the violence, or the threat. It's really, really, really humane. And I love that about the show.
Did you ever attend a philosophy class when you were in prison?
Oh, the chance would be a fine thing. No. Listen, the difference, the disparity in the northeast prisons and the southern prisons are vast. We didn't get that opportunity. You know, I didn't know you could get philosophy lessons in prisons.
But are they available in the south?
Oh,
are they? I didn't know that. Why is there a disparity between prison life in the north and the south?
Money.
The money symbol. And if I make you prisons minister, mm-hmm. and give you unlimited budget, mm-hmm. what's the first thing that you would do? Because our prison system is in a shocking state at the moment.
You've hit us with a big shot there, haven't you? What's the first thing that I would do? That's such a big question. You know, one of the things that I notice in prisons is men don't end up there. It all starts at home. You know, people don't end up in prison because that's... So many people say, the prison system's broken and this is the problem. My belief is that it starts at home. So prison's a symptom. It's not the prescription.
So you would put all of the money into...
Homes and family.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
That's interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Do you mind telling us why home might have benefited from something else for you, if that's one of the reasons why you ended up in prison?
Yeah, so I experienced a lot of violence when I was growing up from a very, very young age. And as a consequence of that, I became violent, and I turned to a lot of negative things, and it didn't have to be that way. I chose what I chose, but it didn't have to be that way.
What's next for you?
I have a series in development with a wonderful company called Kudos. It's about the first police officer in the UK to ever apply zero tolerance style policing, which happened in the northeast,
what is zero tolerance policing? How's that manifesting itself?
Well, I think one of the interesting things is it seems to be making a resurgence. The series is called Broken Windows, and the origin story came from when Mayor Giuliani was in charge of New York. He hired a guy called William Bartlett to come in and give his professional opinion on how to reduce crime, because robbery, rape and murder were at an all-time high. And so he took him around the worst affected areas, and after he brought him back, he says, OK, what do you think? He said, I think what you need to do is you need to clean up the graffiti, you need to wipe away the litter, and you need to fix the broken windows. And Giuliani was like, are you out of your mind? Like, we've got an epidemic here. He says, what I think is happening here is you've got an aura of disorder that's so prevalent that people think it's okay to commit crime around here. So what you need to do is, at every single level, if someone's cycling on the pavement, if someone spits chewing gum on the sidewalk, you come down on them with the maximum penalty of the law. And you build it up from there afterwards. So that's zero tolerance.
Gosh, that's policing for our times, isn't it?
It's about to happen.
That is Rick Renton, and you can see him and you can see his writing work in the BBC series up on the iPlayer now. It's called Waiting for the Out. Glenn had to have a sit down. Victoria thinks that he's a stunning and inspirational fellow, and Wendy was enjoying it too. Do you know what? He's one of those people of whom the terrible cliche, he's been on a journey, mm-hmm, actually fits.
Yeah. Yes, I have only seen one episode of that show, Waiting for the Out, and it's one of the most unusual and quite stirring dramas about prisons I think I've ever seen, because it challenges a lot of preconceptions about the whole, and the people and the individuals. And the lead actor is phenomenal, the one who plays the teacher who goes into prison. He's a young man called Josh Finnan, I think it is, F-I...
And he's playing Dan, yeah, who is the philosophy teacher. Mm. So this is, in real life, Andy West, the guy who wrote the story is based on. Mm. And I think you're right. It's a very surprising series as well, and it's got these beautifully woven themes of what your past brings to your present, and whether or not that means that you can ever really plan your future. It is very clever. Mm. I would definitely recommend it, especially for this weekend. Let's face it, none of us are going out partying.
I'm just looking.
I'm going to put my hula hoops away, and you're just going to hunker down in front of some decent TV, and I'd say that's it.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, the weather in other parts of the country is really severe, and there is this red wind warning for Cornwall, and without over-egging the meteorological pudding, you really shouldn't go out in Cornwall or the Scilly Isles from about, I think it's about 5 o'clock, 6 o'clock tonight, and it's easy to sort of mock these voices of doom, but actually this is important stuff, isn't it? Don't dice with anything. Stay indoors.
Yeah, so obey Auntie Jane then.
Yes, stay indoors, okay? That's it. I mean, not right across the country, but certainly in the Scilly Isles and Cornwall. You are listening to Times Radio, and it is, getting on for 6 minutes to four.
Alexis Conran on Times Radio with Wild Frontiers Travel. Go beyond the headlines and explore the human experiences at the heart of the week's news agenda, with well-informed debate and thoughtful insight, tailor-made for anyone looking to broaden their horizons, not follow the herd.
Plus, get my expertly curated guide to the best the weekend has to offer, whether you're staying in or looking for adventure.
This Saturday afternoon from 1 on Times Radio with Wild Frontiers. Never stop seeking with Wild Frontiers Travel.
Listen at 6:30 every weekday morning for your indispensable briefing on the latest politics, business and sports news of the day.
I always enjoy going back to my childhood home to see Mum and Dad, but as they get older, the more and more guilty I would feel, you know, about leaving them on their own, especially in winter when it's so cold and miserable outside. I visit as often as I can with the rest of my family, but Mum and Dad really need someone around who can help them more regularly than we can. So thank goodness for Ellie. She's their care professional from home instead, and she actually lives with Mum and Dad, which means she can be there for them whenever they need her. It gives us real peace of mind.
Mum and Dad really don't want to leave their home, and we don't want them to either. So living care from home instead was the perfect solution for us. It's been amazing. And Ellie's made such a difference to their lives too. They are so much happier, so much better in themselves. So now, whenever I visit them, they don't feel like Mum and Dad who need to be looked after. They feel like my parents again.
For award-winning home care you can trust, go to homeinstead.co.uk.
Incredible snorkeling.
Carnival!
Sunrises and sunsets.
Grilled lobster.
Hobby cats and kayaking.
Morning swim.
Pina coladas.
Serene spas.
If you love the sound of a Caribbean holiday, then Sandals have every little thing covered. Do it all or do nothing at all. Your perfect holiday is waiting at sandals.co.uk. Sale now on. Atoll protected.
The Wix Peacock Awards on Times Radio with Wix, the experts in kitchens and bathrooms. The Wix kitchen and bathroom sale is on. Explore all the sale offers at wix.co.uk or visit the showroom in your local Wix store.
Now, we have been asking for your proudest moment of the week for a chance to win a £250 Wix voucher. This is part of our Wix Peacock Awards. We've had some fun entries. I did say earlier that not everyone was taking it entirely seriously. There was one bloke who entered and it was, you know, he made a bold claim about his culinary skills. I think he killed his first chicken or he'd done something remarkable and then made a dish with the creature involved.
I think the word butchered had come up, and I allowed my eyes to just move swiftly on it. Actually, Jane, I'm sorry about that.
I should say my colleague is very sensitive. I'm not that sensitive. Anyway, thank you, honestly, for all the entries. Inspiring, genuinely. And the winner is, I'm going to give it, I think, to Jenny. She says, I'm proud as a peacock for managing a small building extension at my home. I moved into my home married and with good health, knowing that an old and defunct conservatory would have to be replaced. I never envisaged that a couple of years later I'd be tackling the project as a single divorced woman with unforeseen health challenges. Certainly not after a sympathy vote, but as somebody with quite low self-esteem, it does feel cathartic to give myself a shout-out for being proud of navigating all this. It's been far from straightforward, with a six-week project now entering its seventh month, along with the initial builders, walking off the job with my hefty deposit. That Wix voucher will be amazing to help me tackle some of the unexpected DIY I'm left with. And if any of your listeners have knowledge of how we can better regulate the building and trades industries so that single women aren't taken for a ride, I'd be grateful to hear. I'm hoping to turn all this into something good, says Jenny. Well, Jenny, for the moment, something good has definitely happened to you. You are the winner of our £250 Wix voucher. And if you would like to take part, because we're running again next week, aren't we? You can send us your proudest moment of the week on WhatsApp 0333 003 2353, or perhaps it's nicer to email, actually, janeandfee@times.radio. Don't forget, the Wix kitchen and bathroom sale is on. Explore all the sale offers at wix.co.uk or go to the showroom in your local Wix store.
The Wix Peacock Awards on Times Radio with Wix, the experts in kitchens and bathrooms. The Wix kitchen and bathroom sale is on. Explore all the sale offers at wix.co.uk or visit the showroom in your local Wix store.
I've often thought one of the solutions to that problem of being a single woman taken advantage of by people in trade is to have a posse that you could call on. And you and I would be more than happy to provide a nationwide urgent response posse. And you could just dial a number and maybe six or seven very short, quite angry middle-aged women would turn up and we'd all take it on together.
Yeah, kind of vigilantes.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, we'd strength in numbers. We'd do it very politely. We'd make a cup of tea, but we'd definitely get it sorted out. Our producer today was Felix Forbes. Our technical operator was, and we hope always will be, Ryan Boyden. Some stunning guests coming your way next week.
Yeah, the award-winning writer Helen Garner and the brilliant actor Derek Jacobi. He's coming in live. Looking forward to it.
Up next, John Pienaar with Drive. Take care this weekend.
Across the UK, on DAB digital radio, online and on your smart speaker. This is Times Radio, the voice of the times.
Thanks, Jane. Thanks for you at 4 o'clock. I'm John Pienaar. This is Times Radio Drive, and here are the headlines. It's understood the government will U-turn on plans to raise business rates for pubs. And the Met Office has issued a rare red warning for wind in Cornwall and the Isles of Scilly. And coming up, we're going to be looking hard at Minneapolis. Is the shooting of a woman by an ICE federal agent a sign of more conflicts erupting? Well, this time between the president and the leaders in the States of the Union. And we'll hear from Republicans and Democrats. Tribal politics in the US means they are more deeply divided than ever. And I'll be talking to the government's employment minister, Dame Diana Johnson, as we hear news of yet another U-turn.
This is Times Radio.
Andy Hayes.
Thank you, John. Good afternoon. The government's expected to do a U-turn over planned rises to business rates for pubs. It follows a backlash from the industry. More than 1,000 pubs have banned Labour MPs from their premises. Chancellor Rachel Reeves is now pledging to give extra financial support to pubs on the brink of closure. Conservative leader Kemi Badenoch has given her reaction.
Over Christmas, Labour MPs were banned from every single pub they tried to get into. They come back and realise that nobody likes them, so now they're pushing for a U-turn. We told them this when Rachel Reeves put out that budget. I told her on that day that she was not doing right by pubs. We have a much better plan, and that is to slash business rates for all of the high street, not just pubs.
The Met Office has upgraded its wind warning for Cornwall and the Isles of Scilly from amber to red. It says Storm Goretti will bring dangerous stormy winds starting about now and continuing until 11 p.m. Forecasters say there is a danger to life. Elsewhere, there could be up to 8 inches of snow over parts of Wales and the Midlands. Joe Wheeler, a meteorologist at Square Raindrop, says conditions will be mixed, led by a slightly milder spell.
As the milder air comes in with an awful lot of moisture in it, you'll see heavy snow followed by heavy rain. And then after that, heavy snow again because the cold air comes back around. As I say, you'll get that mixture of either snow, rain, snow, and the strong winds to go with it. Mostly across England and Wales. I think Scotland, Northern Ireland probably missing the worst of it.
The Mayor of London, Sir Sadiq Khan, says he's never agreed to or endorsed lower standards of vetting at the Metropolitan Police. A diversity panel overruled more than 100 decisions, admitting candidates who'd originally been rejected on safety grounds. Two rapists were among them. Home Secretary Shabana Mahmood has described the failings as a dereliction of duty. Stephen Roberts used to be in charge of recruitment and training at Scotland Yard.
It's the quality of policing and what you do with the officers you've got that really matters. Obviously, there's a minimum point where you simply can't provide any sort of service at all. But they've got to be the right people. They've got to be properly managed and properly led.
Some NHS hospitals are converting corridors for patient care, adding call bells and plug sockets. Investigators say this poses serious hazards, including more difficult monitoring, infection control and potentially a lack of oxygen. Dr. Ian Higginson is president of the Royal College of Emergency Medicine.
The really sad thing about this report is that it shows how normalised corridor care has become. And the fact that literally tens of thousands of people are dying in association with this problem every year and it doesn't really make the headlines that often is another indictment of how bad this problem has become.
The government says it's working with Trust to phase out corridor care. And former Premier League referee David Coote has been spared jail despite admitting making an indecent image of a child. He's been given a suspended sentence after a video of a 15-year-old boy was found on his laptop. And for a news bulletin when you want it, search for the Times News Briefing on the Times Radio app.
Across the UK, on DAB Digital Radio, on the free Times Radio app, and via your smart speaker. Henry Bonson on Times Radio.
Hello, I'm John Pienaar, and not Henry Bonson, here with Drive on Times Radio. Thank you for joining me. Now, if you want a stark and startling snapshot of the way that, Donald Trump's administration is shaking and redefining America and the world, just take a look at the front page of the Times now and keep listening to this show. President Trump is now having ordered American forces to attack in Venezuela and capture its leader. The president is saying today that he expects and means to keep control of Venezuela for years to come. Now, a little later, we're going to be asking asking whether Britain is being pulled into the wake of unpredictable American military action, refusing to even consider whether the USA broke international law by raiding Venezuela and seizing its leader, watching the sudden build-up of US forces stationed here in the UK, and this week helping to seize and board a Russian-flagged oil tanker in mid-Atlantic, arrested for breaking American, not British, oil sanctions on Venezuela. Keir Starmer's government naturally wants to keep on President Trump's good side, wants to demonstrate the value of Britain and other European NATO allies to Donald Trump, as Starmer and other European leaders try to support Ukraine and force Putin to the negotiating table. But with a president as unpredictable and frankly erratic as Trump, where does following America lead? The world is asking that question today, and we are asking the question this afternoon. And meanwhile, in the USA, the change and destruction of what was once normal is now being watched as I speak by millions, countless millions of people, here and across the world on social media. Video footage of an American woman in her car in Minneapolis being shot three times in the face and her head by a US federal immigration agent. The pictures are horrible. They just shot someone, said a clearly horrified stand-by. The significance of this is potentially huge. The investigation has barely started, yet President Trump has already delivered his damning verdict. His damning verdict on the dead woman. That shout of horror that you heard there, according to the president, with no apparent evidence, came from a professional agitator. The federal agent that Trump appointed, that agent's boss, Kirsty Noem, echoed the president's line.
ICE agents repeatedly ordered her to get out of the car and to stop obstructing law enforcement, but she refused to obey their commands. She then proceeded to weaponize her vehicle and attempted to run a law enforcement officer over. This appears as an attempt to kill or to cause bodily harm to agents, an act of domestic terrorism. The ICE officer, fearing for his life and the other officers around him and the safety of the public, fired defensive shots.
That's Kirsty Noem, the head of Homeland Security. And this before any formal investigation has really begun, let alone completed. Now, the mayor of Minneapolis, on the other hand, he's not holding back what he makes of all of this. He tore into what he described as immigration agents deployed by Washington using force and fear to terrorize, and in this case, kill people in cities and states controlled by Trump's political opponents.
To ICE, get the out of Minneapolis. Your stated reason for being in this city is to create some kind of safety, and you are doing exactly the opposite. Somebody is dead. That's on you. This was an agent recklessly using power that resulted in somebody dying. To the family, I'm so deeply sorry. We're going to be working towards justice as quickly as we possibly can right now. And justice is what we've all got to get.
The mayor of Minneapolis, Jacob Frey, there. The shooting happened just a couple of miles from the spot that George Floyd was murdered by a Minneapolis police officer. Now that, of course, we remember, triggered global protests against racism in the police. This incident could be in its own way more significant, symbolic of the historic struggle between the president in Washington and the cities and the states of the republic now ruled